Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Untold Story podcast, and I'm thrilled to have with me today Valentine Lowe, who is a royal correspondent for The Times in London and has a new book out called Courtiers: Intrigue, Ambition, and the Power Players Behind the House of Windsor. So, Valentine, great timing.
It is.
Good to have you here today. Thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations
on
this book, which is really getting a lot of positive review and reaction. So, you know, I always like to sort of start these podcasts because we call it the untold story. How did you turn out to be a royal correspondent? You know, when you were a little boy growing up in the UK, is this what you wanted to be?
Absolutely not. And in fact, I remember when Diana married Charles, I wasn't exactly a Republican, but I was not interested at all. We were all given the day off work, and I worked in an office that overlooked the Mall. That's where the procession was, and I could have gone in for work and watched that procession. But I said no, we had a picnic in the countryside with my friends instead. I fell into it like pretty much all royal correspondents. We all fall into it because no one ever sets out with an ambition to be a royal correspondent because it was slightly weird.
What did you want to be when you were starting out in the business?
I think I wanted to, I had vague thoughts about being a political journalist, but also I like writing. I like, you know, where you can really get going with the words.
Well, that's no surprise because you write beautifully, and I've read, you know, covering a lot of the major events over the last 19 years or so for Fox. I always read your reporting when we're covering those events, and it's always beautifully written and has a lot of really rich detail in it. So I guess kind of at this point, these folks are all over the news in not a great light at this point. And you are a royal correspondent, so we've heard a lot from Prince Harry lately that is not particularly flattering to the royal correspondents. What's your reaction when you see what he's saying about your motives and how it works and how you're all locked into the palace and how there are trade-offs? What's your side of that story?
Well, I've got a lot of reactions to that. One is that if you told the palace that people like me were deferential to them and repeating what we've been spoon-fed, they'd be absolutely astonished because that's not the way they see it. They see us as, you know, not exactly the enemy, but people to be treated warily, and we can always go off message and write stories they don't like. So the idea that we're somehow in a cahoots with the palace is just not something I recognise at all. Now, I've known for a long time that Harry hates the media. He's hated us for a long time. And, you know, quite understandably, I think it'd be a bit odd if Harry didn't hate the media, because if you look at what happened to his mother, those are bad times, and, you know, the paps that chased his mother, you know, it was not something that the industry could be proud of, I think, in general terms. But when he talks about the households sort of actively briefing correspondents against Harry and Meghan, that's not something I recognise. Now, that sort of thing, you know, I'm not being naive here or trying to sort of paint a rosy picture. That sort of thing has gone on. I mean, particularly during the Charles and Diana years, you know, there definitely was briefings against people. Often, though, not actually the actual household. It's often people just one further removed. So it's kind of friends of. They're often who do the most damaging briefing. But actually, in the Harry and William years, the last few years, there actually has not been briefing against one or the other. And one of the things I'd say about what Harry's had to say is he's got, makes a lot of accusations about the household planting stories, leaking stories, but he never talks in the particular. He never says this story or that story. So we kind of say, well, what are you talking about? Because also Harry gets a lot of it wrong. If you read his book, there's one point when he talks about how the coverage of a day when Meghan, after their honeymoon, Meghan comes back from honeymoon, June 2018, and she has an away day with the Queen. She goes up to Cheshire. They do a few engagements. It's a nice day. I remember very clearly they went to the Royal Train, and I saw them off the Royal Train. And Harry says this was covered by the press as an unmitigated disaster. That's how the press portrayed it. And I actually went to the lengths of looking up what every single newspaper did. And it was all glowing. It was all positive. So Harry could have remembered it completely wrongly. And I think he's got himself into such a state about it, in his hatred of the media. A hatred which, as I say, you know, comes from somewhere completely understandable. But his hatred is such that he only sees the negative. And he obsessively looks online to see what's happened online. And I think he often conflates what's online and what's on social media with what's going on in the papers.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, or a number of the things that you brought up, but I'm kind of shocked by how much time and attention he has spent when you go through this book, reading, you know, comments on stories below. I would have thought, growing up the way he's grown up, that he would have kind of hard-tuned a lot of that out a long time ago, but he gives it credence that I don't really think it deserves. And the numbers of people who are commenting on social media is just the tiniest sliver of the population, whether it's here or in the UK. So do you think that's all him? Or do you think that Meghan is obsessed with what's being said about her and that she is making sure that he gets upset about this as well? You talk about their relationship a lot in the book, and their relationship with staff. So what's your take on that?
Certainly reading the book, I think it's largely him, because he describes in the book how at one point early in their relationship, he's every few hours going to her with another accusation saying, what's this about? What's the truth of this? What's going on here? And that definitely points to the fact that he is the one who obsessively, unhealthily, is looking at all this stuff. There are various conversations in his book about with his father. And his father keeps on saying, don't read it, don't read it. Mm-hmm. That's not the way Harry sees it. Harry has to read it.
It's an unhealthy obsession. I heard him talk in an interview recently about how he put himself on a digital diet and he's feeling better about it all now because he doesn't read it as obsessively as he does. You know, one of the things that you talk about is that the staff said that dealing with the two of them is like dealing with teenagers. What do you mean by that?
I think they mean they were stubborn, difficult, hard to reason with. I mean, one of the things that caused rows between Harry and his staff was that summer when he took something like at least four private jets to various places. So on the one hand, he, you know, lectures people about the environment, and the next day he takes a private jet. And his unreason and stubbornness, I think, made things very difficult.
You know, you also say that you think that they wanted to be rejected, or people around them said that from the beginning it felt in some ways like they weren't long-termers as senior royals.
Well, there are two things there. One is that's the way they felt that she behaved when she turned up. So very early on, when there was a lot of kind of unwelcome and that's unpleasant media intrusion and media coverage in the very first days that we knew about her existence, and they were demanding, Harry was demanding that his press guy puts out a press statement, you know, putting this right. She says to a senior courtier, says, you know, I know how this works. You don't care about the girlfriend. And that's quite a sort of combative and possibly paranoid thing to say, because obviously they were doing their best to make her feel welcome. The other thing is, Harry, you know, for some time before, he'd had his hatred of the media, he had a distrust of the courtiers from the other households. He had a sense of frustration about himself. He felt he had a sort of limited shelf life. And he wanted to do good. I mean, yeah, there's a lot about Harry which is great. And he wanted to do good things. He wanted to use his position to achieve things. But he felt he had a limited time in which to do that before he became old, middle-aged, no one cared, Prince George is coming out the tracks, let's look at Prince George. So in that limited time, he wanted to do something. So he had a lot going on in his head. And also, he used to constantly question the loyalty of his staff. Are you really serving me? Or have you become one of them? It was, you know, one of them, one of the other courtiers who we don't like. And someone said to me something incredibly interesting. This was someone who knows Harry very well. And they said that in a way, she did him the greatest kindness. Because, you know, we knew he was desperately unhappy for those last couple of working years. But we didn't know what to do about it. And she came along and showed him a way out. Because in a way, I mean, I don't think the fact that they left the royal family is a disaster. I think being born into the royal family shouldn't be a life sentence. If that's not life for you, you should be able to get out. What's bad is the way it was handled. And I think there's blame on both sides. I think Harry and Meghan were very difficult and made things difficult. But I think also there are failures on behalf of the household. And the main failure on the part of the household was not, wasn't how they dealt with things when Harry and Meghan said, we want to go. It was as were the year before that. No one really spotted that things were going wrong. They were unhappy. We got to do something about it. Or if they did spot it, they didn't do anything about it.
So that's sort of a courtier failure, isn't it? Because their job, as you write about it, is to help to preserve the monarchy.
Yeah.
And that's the way it worked under Queen Elizabeth for all of those years, that they were working for the crown.
Yeah.
To preserve the crown, not the particular individual who happened to be part of the royal family at that moment. So why do you think they failed? And are those people still in positions of authority and influence? Or did it end up hurting any of them?
They are definitely still in positions of authority and influence, although one of them is on the way out. Harry, in the book, his hatred and contempt for these senior courtiers is very visible, very explicit. And the three most senior people in the palace, he's got nicknames for. He calls them the bee, the fly, and the wasp. And, you know, he expresses his opinions. And it's quite interesting, this, because Fergie, Sarah Ferguson, the bouncy redhead, married to Prince Andrew, she had similar problems with the courtiers. She didn't like them. But the senior courtier who she had to deal with, Sir Robert Fellowes, the Queen's private secretary, was in fact her dad's first cousin. He was family. And she, in the book, she expresses her contempt for him, but she can't bring herself to name him. She calls him Mr. Z. So it's a trait. You know, they're so wound up about these people, they can't even bring themselves to use their name.
The Untold Story continues right after this.
Add a berry blast off for your day with the new Berry Pebbles. A berry twist on a classic breakfast. Perfect for giving those growing minds a blast of creativity. With a new berry way to Pebbles. Yabba dabba do you with Berry Pebbles. Head to postpebblescereal.com to learn more. Yabba dabba do and the Flintstones and all related characters and elements, copyright and trademark Hanna-Barbera.
You know, one of the things that has been discussed recently as all of this kind of sinks in is, are they trying to bring the monarchy down? And is that possible? And one of the ways that I would look at it is, you know, you see the countries in the Commonwealth bristling against the Commonwealth, especially in the Caribbean, and there's discussions about another vote in Scotland even.
Yeah.
So I asked myself, if Meghan and Harry woke up one morning in Los Angeles and heard that some of these islands had indeed broken away, do they feel like, that's kind of a good day for us, isn't it?
I think they might feel that. There's a huge difference between wanting these people to pull away from the monarchy, the Caribbean islands or whatever it is, and wanting to bring the monarchy down. I mean, Harry has always expressed loyalty to the late Queen and said in television interviews he's got nothing against the monarchy. He believes in the monarchy. But, you know, they do behave slightly as if they're trying to bring it down. This has been a rough and rocky period for the royal family. But I think they'll survive. If you look at what a lot of the book and the Netflix series is about, there's a lot of family stuff there. When the book came out, we all latched onto the accounts of his fight with William in Nottingham Cottage and what he had to say about Camilla. But that's all family stuff, and that, you know, it's painful, it's embarrassing, they didn't like it, but, you know, it blows over. It does blow over. And if you think of the really rough times the royal family went through around Diana, around the Morton book, the Panorama interview, and then her death, you know, their reputation was quite battered by that. But, you know, they knuckled down afterwards and thought, well, how do we repair this? And, you know, slowly it got better. I mean, certainly in Britain, there's this residual love and respect for the royal family. It can never be taken for granted. It might not last forever. But at the moment, I think the core is still there.
You know, in writing this kind of book, you have to build relationships with people who work there, are close to the family, who, as you said, you know, someone who knows Harry very well. How difficult is it to establish that? And how, you know, are there things in this book that you think, well, that person will never talk to me again?
Well, when I was first commissioned to write the book, the publisher said to me, are you all right about doing this? And I think in the way, what I want to do is, first of all, is tell the story, because I think that's most important. And I was worried about, there were one or two people, I thought, would they still talk to me again? We've had peace talks since, and I think they are now still talking to me again. But actually, surprisingly, I've had quite positive feedback from, people who work at the palace. They think it tells the story in a fairly faithful way.
So, in terms of William and Kate, I mean, they come off in some of this very stuffy.
Yeah.
You say, yeah, that's the way they are?
No, I'm saying that's definitely how they come.
Is that the way they are?
I don't know. I don't know them in that way. That's why it was so interesting to read the book, because you see them behave in ways you don't see in public. You get the curtain is pulled to one side, isn't it?
Indeed. What do you want people to understand about what's going on right now that you think, in this country, it seems like, you do have people who are supportive of Meghan and Harry. You have a lot of people who could care less, right? They're like, why do we even care about what these royal family and all their palaces and, and then you have people who are very solid in the William and Kate camp.
Yeah.
Any thoughts, spending time here of, how everyone interprets it and what maybe Americans get wrong about the whole thing?
This is slightly dangerous territory, but I'm going to go there anyway. I think there's a misconception that the British press was racist. There were one or two articles in the early days that were written which were unforgivable. I mean, let's be straightforward about that. But as a general rule, they weren't. I think the coverage of Meghan was much more positive for much longer than Harry or Meghan would concede.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if there were any problems in terms of stereotypes and so on, is that there was an element of anti-Americanism going on, both in how the royal family accepted Meghan. I think that's certainly the picture that Harry paints, and in some of the press coverage. I think, the basic problem was in Buckingham Palace, they have many qualities, but they don't talk Californian. And there was this major cultural difference between Meghan and them. And I think that was much more important than any racial issues, but I don't think really played a significant part at all.
Do you buy that she didn't understand? She thought they were basically just kind of like celebrities. She grew up in Los Angeles. She understands celebrity, she said. So she figured the royal family was just sort of like that, and that she didn't know that she was going to have to bow when she met the Queen out of respect. Do you buy all that?
I think that's exaggerated, but I think it's got an element of truth in it. Mm. I spoke to someone from within the palace who is actually incredibly critical of the palace and thinks they got a lot wrong with her. But they said she wanted to be the Beyoncé of the royal family. And
because they needed one of those. I mean, we all love Beyoncé, but so what about reconciliation? How do you see this situation a year down the road, for example?
It's slightly hard to see how it's going to change, but it's got to change, because you've got the coronation coming up in May, and no one really wants this looming over like a dark shadow over that. But in order for the family to achieve any kind of reconciliation, you've got to have conversations. You've got to have conversations between them which are delicate, which are diplomatic, which are possibly quite painful, and of necessity private. And you can't blame the
Nothing's
royal family.
Nothing's private anymore.
You can't blame the royal family for thinking, well, how can we have a private conversation with Harry? It all just goes out there. So how you make the first steps in achieving any reconciliation is
And do you sense
challenge.
That they want, that the palace cares whether or not there's a reconciliation? Do they want it?
Well, that's interesting way you phrase that, because the palace desperately wants it. They really want things to be smoothed over. This doesn't do anyone any good whatsoever. But you can imagine that William, after all that Harry, much more than Charles, William, after all that Harry said about him, you might think, I'm done with my brother. And that's horrible, really.
Valentine Lowe, thank you so much. The book is Courtiers, Intrigue, Ambition, and the Power Players Behind the House of Windsor. Valentine has covered the royal family for a long time for the Times of London, an excellent royal correspondent, and it's great to have you with us. Great success to you with the book, and maybe we'll see you when we come over for the coronation in May.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Valentine. You've been listening to The Untold Story with Martha McCallum. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Make sure to rate and review. For more podcasts, go to foxnewspodcast.com. Listen ad-free with the Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts, and Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.